When Patricia Schultz first published 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, it touched a nerve with readers. It got people talking about their bucket lists and planning which of our world's cultural, historic, and scenic destinations they'll plan to get to someday. She joins us now to consider a few of the possibilities. Our interview was recorded prior to the global pandemic shutdowns. Patricia, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Rick.
Well, you published this book for the first time back in 2003. A lot has changed since then. What's changed in how you approach travel?
Well, ideally, you always bring more and more context to your next trip, understanding things perhaps in a different way because you've simply experienced so much prior to arriving in your new destination. So the more I travel, the more I have a broader and more general and more comprehensive understanding of the world. I don't pretend to have even scratched the surface, but compared, I think of, you know, how I saw the world in an innocent 20-something way, fresh out of university, and it just seems like a lifetime ago, and in fact, it was.
You know, you've hit on something there, Patricia, because the context enhances your ability to appreciate a place. I'm always thinking about budget travel tips, but a good budget travel tip is take more context with you and you get more out of the experience, regardless of the cost. I have a history degree in European history, and I'm far from any sort of a great historian or scholar, but I certainly value my history degree when it comes to enjoying the sites I'll be seeing.
And really, you could spend a lifetime. I mean, when people, I saw somebody yesterday who actually had the innocence to say, oh, I've done Europe. Yeah, okay.
Well, because my humble approach is every time I come home, I have a better appreciation of what I don't know, how much more there is to see and experience. And
it keeps you humble, right?
It really does. It wallops your ethnocentricity, and it rearranges all your cultural furniture in a way that you didn't know could be rearranged.
That's a great expression.
I love that. Now, in your new edition, or your latest edition, what are a couple of editions in the book that you're particularly happy about in the 1,000 Places to See Before You Die?
Well, I added actually hundreds of new places, and I didn't change the title, but rather I took the original fundamental entries and kind of dismantled them and reorganized them, merged and fused so that the organization of the book is quite different. So, for example, two or three or four even Maya ruins in the Yucatan, Mexico, that originally had their own separate entry have become La Ruta Maya, the Maya Trail, because they share so much history and they're so similar to some degree. And really, it just allowed me to open up the book to two or three new listings, not in Mexico, but on the other side of the world.
Is the total still 1,000?
Yeah, it is.
You kind of cheated then. You combined some because you love so many different places. Do you notice any trends on what's coming and what's going?
Well, one thing that I've seen, not just immediately recently, but in the last many years, is that the whole area that I first visited in the 70s, way back when, of the southeastern peninsula of Asia has become so much a favorite destination for cruise lines, bringing, you know, the boomers to visit that particular area of the world. But GAP students or GAP travelers or young 20, 30-somethings, forget about Europe. It's all become Cambodia and Laos and the Philippines. And it's amazing how many young people are doing Indonesia and the islands. And with thousands and thousands of islands, they've found an area of the world that is incredibly beautiful with very welcoming people, ancient civilizations, so much that's fascinating and cheap.
And cheap. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Patricia Schultz about her groundbreaking book, The 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. Patricia, I'd like to kind of quickly zip through a few of your reactions, if I just ask you. You have Imam Square.
Oh, I loved Iran. To me, if I, like, die tomorrow, I'll die happy because that, to me, was one of my favorite experiences ever. The people are some of the nicest, most hospitable, and genuinely friendly people I've met anywhere.
And we can travel there. I mean, there's ways to travel there, just like we traveled in the Soviet Union in the old days. And it's people to people travel. It's a good thing.
Exactly. Now, as Americans, you need to be accompanied by a group. But small groups are fine. People from the states who are traveling to Iran are like-minded and I found fascinating in my group. And I would never have experienced the amount and understood or learned as much had we not been accompanied by, in our case, a remarkable guide.
The guides are generally very interested in having you gain an appreciation of Persia. But that's great that you added Iran. When you think back on all the travels lately, what's one particularly delightful or unforgettable breakfast you had?
Well, I was in South Korea, and we have a lot of Korean restaurants in New York City where I live, but I've always, you know, considered them a dinner evening option. So to have a South Korean, you know, kimchi for breakfast was a new concept for me. But you, as you know, in all of Asia, it's really easy to get, you know, toast, jam and a cup of tea. So it's not like I lost any weight in Korea. The food is very, very important. And there are so many different kinds of food. And I just had a field day. Everything was fresh and delicious. And food is so important to them.
It sounds like when I was in Japan, it was that way. And I'll never forget, Japanese breakfasts were something I particularly enjoyed. They were just like adventures.
They were. They were. What a way to start your day off, right?
I love it. Yeah, little tiny crunchy fish. It's so fun to browse through the book, these thousand places. And a lot of the experiences are on water. What comes to mind as an unforgettable on-the-water experience?
Well, you, again, can identify with this because I was so late in doing this, I finally did my classic, unforgettable, more lovely than I had anticipated, cruise down the Danube.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you hear about it and it's hardly anything new and they've been doing it for centuries.
What's one image on the Danube? Why did you enjoy that?
Well, there are four major capitals that sit directly on the Danube. And to me, Budapest in the evening when it's all illuminated and you drive under the chain bridge or any of those. I think there are a dozen bridges that cross the Danube.
And anybody in Budapest, you can hop on a little one-hour cruise boat, too. And at night, the city is so beautifully illuminated.
Oh, it's magnificent. Mm. It's so romantic. And the Buddha castle up on the hill and the parliament building, which is just, it'll take your breath away.
Yeah. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Patricia Schultz, travel dreaming through her 1,000 places to see before you die. Patricia, when you do your book, a lot of times you're exposed to tribal culture and nomads and so on. I have a particular sort of affinity for nomadic groups and their struggles. In this crazy modern world, what experience impacted you and gave you a better appreciation of tribal culture or nomads?
Well, when I think of nomads, in fact, I think of these tribes, which for thousands of years, I don't even know, certainly back to the time of Genghis Khan and before, were traveling herdsmen who would take their reindeer flocks and horses and the famous Mongolian pony horses and follow the seasons and food and whatnot, and that they still even exist, you know, always in dwindling numbers. I think their winters are just unprecedentedly harsh. I don't, you know, having visited in July, I can't even imagine what it's like. They're all kind of, you know, making their way to Ulaanbaatar, which is growing by the millions as the countryside empties out. So the numbers are diminishing. And it's a shame because it's, you know, we visited yurts. There's one road through the country and you'd see a yurt off on, you know, a hillside and go off-road, drive up to it, walk right in, and there was, you know, a cup of yak tea waiting for you and hospitality that goes back centuries. Lovely people, lovely people, and just stunningly beautiful countryside, empty and just beautiful.
Patricia, of the former Soviet Union, all these, the Stans and Georgia and Ukraine and Russia and the Baltic states, do you have a favorite destination?
Well, my trip to the Caucasus, the Southern Caucasus, is quite recent. I did Armenia, the Republic of Georgia, no, not the state, and Azerbaijan all in one trip because they're very accessible one to the next. But that's, I think, a little bit more exotic than the average person. And just to, you know, to consider Russia alone, Moscow and St. Petersburg, so easy. You know, if you're pressed for time or if you want to start there, to me, they're magnificent cities, and apples and oranges night and day. There are no two cities that are farther apart
from
each other.
That's so true, isn't it? Yeah, St. Petersburg and Moscow. And the only downside to me is you got to buy that visa. It cost you a couple $100. But after that, St. Petersburg is just sparkling these days. It's amazing.
It's incredible. And I think the kind of jewel in the crown of all the various Baltic ports, when you do that cruise, which is so popular through the Baltic Sea, you kind of head east and up north, and you spend, many cruise lines now understand that the average 5 to 8 hours doesn't cut it. And many of them offer two nights even in St. Petersburg. And some will arrange to have you take that high-speed four-hour train from St. Petersburg to Moscow. So you don't see much of Moscow, but you get enough of a glimpse of it to understand just how different they are, those two cities.
Yeah, on my North European cruise, it was the one stop that had an overnight where you spent 2 days there instead of just one. And St. Petersburg certainly deserves that.
Oh, you could spend 2 weeks, right?
Well, what we did was we jumped ship. We left the cruise in St. Petersburg and spent 5 days there rather than returning to Denmark where the cruise started. Also, Patricia, I'm curious about your travels in Iceland. Have you been to Iceland?
Yeah, I was a latecomer to Iceland. Yeah, because it's been like 5, 6, 7 years now where it's the hot topic and everybody's been. And the Iceland tourism authorities are very clever because they're now repackaging it for the last few years, not just as a summer destination, but as the Northern Lights destination. So now it's become quite year-round and people are going from the East Coast. It's 3 to 5 hours. It's pretty accessible. So you can even go for a long weekend, although I don't encourage that because until you get out of Reykjavik, which is a really cool capital city or just city in general, but once you get out of the city and do that ring road or at least portions of the ring road or go northwest to the western fjords, you don't even understand how magnificent the topography is. This island of ice and fire, it's just beautiful.
From a geological point of view, it's interesting because it literally is where America and Europe meet. A geologist would know
and
that.
And lovely people, English-speaking people,
And, really you know, cool. It's not a cheap place, but it's no more expensive than Denmark or something. And it's certainly worth having
on your radar. I don't think any place is as expensive as Denmark.
Denmark is pretty pricey. I say that because Norway, to me, is more expensive than Denmark. But it's
They're all crazy expensive. But I've never discouraged anyone from going anywhere because of the price. You just need to do your homework.
Yeah,
and so you go like 8 days instead of 10 and no, you don't eat out 3 times a day.
Right.
So it's all, every place is doable, whether it's Paris or Tokyo or
there's people
Hong
who live
Kong,
there who go out to and they buy groceries. You can buy groceries. You can rent a bicycle.
And how fun is that?
That's part of the culture. As we anticipate the day when we can stop dreaming and start actually traveling again, we're exploring a few of the world's best destinations with Patricia Schultz. Our conversation was recorded prior to the COVID pandemic closures. Patricia is the author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, its domestic spin-off of Places to See in the U.S. and Canada, and she's selected 1,000 scenic photos to accompany her latest coffee table version of the book. We have links to her work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Hey, Patricia, the crowdsourcing sites like TripAdvisor have become quite a force lately, much more so than when you wrote your book originally. How do you use them, and in what ways are they helpful, and in what ways are they not?
I know that so many naysayers, you know, poo-poo the importance or even the existence of, for example, TripAdvisor. But hey, I'm a big fan of TripAdvisor, and I get some of my best tips. I think that you need, as with anything or place in life, you need to approach it intelligently. You need to understand who are writing these reviews. You need to read more than one or two. And you need to do other research above and beyond TripAdvisor alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty phenomenal what they have created in just a few years. And the importance in choosing a place and understanding which, you know, for example, in the hotel world, because that's how it started, which rooms to avoid, which rooms to suggest, why you might want to reconsider because they're doing renovation in the annex and you don't want to, you know, wind up with a reservation in that room when, in fact, the historical original wing of the hotel is where, I mean, all of that kind of information, is, you know, 20, maybe 40, maybe 5% of it not worth reading, probably, but you have to wade through all of that and kind of
those kind of comments
out.
You're not going to see in the promotional brochures of the hotel, that's for sure.
Yeah.
In TripAdvisor, you've got hotels, you've got eateries, restaurants, and you've got things to see and do. I find that the things to see and do listing is the most helpful for me because it just lets me know what's available.
And they'll put all of the landmark, can't miss, Taj Mahal, you mm-hmm. know, Louvre, you know, Tate Gallery kind of mm-hmm. top of the line, and then mixed in with all of this obscure stuff.
I like the obscure stuff. I'll read the top 50 things to see and do, and I don't care how they rate compared to each
yeah.
other. I just, if there is a leprosy museum in Bergen, I want to know about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Where you'll find it. I know. Yeah. It always amazes me, and I love that mix, you
right.
know, of the well-known historical with the unsung and quirky. And sometimes they're right up against each other.
Patricia Schultz, it's so much fun talking with you. Best wishes with your work on 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. I want to finish just with some great travel quotes and to get your just brief and off the top of your head response to each. 1,500 years ago, Muhammad said, "Don't tell me how educated you are. Tell me how much you've traveled."
Love that. And it just resonates straight to the middle of my heart because I had a most wonderful education, thank you, Mom and Dad, but it was my foundation upon which everything I've ever learned through any time I've left the front door, whether it's by train or donkey or tuk-tuk or airplane, everything I've learned in life of real pertinent importance to me, I've learned through travel.
Thomas Jefferson traveled a lot, and he wrote that travel makes a person wiser, if less happy.
I think of India. Is India a happy place? And so many times it just will break your heart. But it's magnificent. If you have any interest in India, I say go now, mm-hmm. go many times, stay as long as you can. It's one of the most insightful mm-hmm. and inspiring places
yeah.
anywhere in the world. And that's true of travel everywhere, this kind of mix.
It makes it tougher to ignore the realities beyond our borders.
Yeah,
and if that makes your life less happy, well, that's reality. And if you can't handle that, go to Orlando.
And that's your education in life, isn't it?
Yeah. Mark Twain traveled, and his probably the most famous travel quote ever, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness."
You know, I think our politicians should not even be allowed to consider to sign on for some of their positions until they show their passport. I think that students should have their junior year abroad semesters or years or even, you know, a week abroad subsidized by the government. Mm-hmm. I think that travel is just so important to opening up your head and understanding America's place in the world.
Thank goodness universities are recognizing that a full, well-rounded upper education
it's
includes
slow in
a little
coming.
Travel. Yeah. My friend Carl Franz, who's beloved for writing The People's Guide to Mexico, his subtitle was, "Wherever you go, there you are."
And I have no words for that because it kind of says it all. It doesn't matter where you go, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Every place offers its own gem of experience and adventure. Mm-hmm. Adventure's out there. Who said that? Amelia Earhart. Adventure's out there.
It's out there. Become a temporary local. And that relates to my last quote. I was going to just quote myself. If an opportunity presents itself while on the road, say yes.
And my postscript to that is that if an opportunity does not present itself to you, then make it.
Make it. Amen. Patricia Schultz, thanks so much. It's always great to talk with you. Congratulations on 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, and happy travels.
Oh, thank you. Same to you, Rick. Thank you.
Where do you want to go? Tell us next at 877-333-RICK. It's Travel with Rick Steves.